أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. Dear viewers, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. As you remember, in our previous session, I talked about a new moral school of thought called subjectivism. I elaborated on the theory presented by this school of thought. According to this school of thought, X is good if you like it. And the same X can be bad if you dislike it. So what it matters, what is important, is your like and dislike. What is of significance is your preference. Look at your preference. Look at your feelings. What do you like and what do you dislike? Your likes and your dislikes guide you throughout your life. You don't need any other guide. You don't need any other leader. What leads you to your destination is your feeling. Then give importance to your feeling and pay attention to it. As I mentioned before, this school of thought has presented a number of arguments in order to justify their theory. According to them, subjectivism is a must. It must be the prevailing tradition. Why? Firstly, as I mentioned before, because of the ordinary language. Look at the ordinary language. How do the people use the two sentences, I like and it is good? People use these two sentences interchangeably. They use one sentence in place of another, and they don't feel any trouble in this connection. When they want to say, I like it, they mean it is good. When they say it is good, they mean they like it. So there is connection, always there is a connection between what they like and what is good. So this connection is very much significant and it is very much meaningful. Secondly, look at the behavior of the people. How do they behave? And look at their practices. In practice, everyone of us, according to the subjectivist, is a subjectivist. Everyone of us follows his or her own feelings in one way or the other. According to the subjectivist, it is only the subjectivist who are honest enough to confess to this reality. Others practice the same tradition, but they are, according to a subjectivist, they are hypocrites. They do not want to mention this, but practically they follow this tradition. And thirdly, according to them, this school of thought provides you with moral freedom. Moral freedom is a very important issue. According to cultural relativists, you are a hostage, you are a slave in the hand of the society. You are like a puppet in the hand of the society. The society plays with you. It tells you what to do and what not to do. It is your guide, the society. The society is everything according to cultural relativism. But according to the subjectivist school of thought, as I mentioned, what is important is your feeling. You are the master of your own self. You are the master of your destiny. You are the master of your future. It is you who can shape your own future. It is you who can mold your own destiny. It is not the society that has an impact on you. It is your feeling that has an impact on you. So this is very much important. According to subjectivists, this school of thought provides you with moral freedom, while cultural relativism deprives you of moral freedom, and it makes you a slave in the hand of the society. So these were some of the arguments put forth by the subjectivists. But in this session, we want to look at this school of thought critically to find out whether this school of thought is a good school of thought, whether it is good to follow it. We will, inshallah, look at this school of thought critically and find out the flaws with this school of thought. Scholars have raised a number of objections against this school of thought. One objection that is very clear and that is very much obvious is that if this school of thought holds, if this school of thought is the standard method of evaluation, then there should not be any social evil on the ground. We must not face any social evils in our own societies. If this school is right, then we must not have theft. We must not have robbery. We must not have murder. We must not have suicide. We must not have wars on large or small scales. All these evils must be eradicated. All these social evils must be removed. And we must not witness any one of these evils in our society. And as a result, there must not be any police, any law enforcement agency, because we don't need any law enforcement agency. When there is no crime, when there is no social evil, then we don't need any law enforcement agency. Why should we pay for such an institution? Why should we give time to creating such an institution? And as a result, there must not be any court, any high court. And because we don't need any court, because nothing goes wrong, everything is right. When everything is in its place, when nothing wrong is committed, then we don't need any court. We don't need any judge. And we don't need any judgment passed by any judge, because there is no social evil. While on the contrary, if we look at our societies, if you look at human societies, we find all these things. Every country has its own military force in order to fight against aggressors. Every country has got it is one law enforcement agencies in order to fight against any social disorder. And every country has it is one legal system. All these institutions are created in order to fight against social evils, in order to put a stop on social evils. So social evils are there. In the existence of social evils is an evidence that tells us that subjectivism is not right. Were subjectivism right, we should not have had such kind of things. In the existence of such kind of things is a clear witness that tells us that this school of thought is wrong and this school of thought is not correct. For we do have social evils. In order to stop social evils, we have courts, we have law enforcement agencies, and we have armies. So this is one of the objections that is raised against this school of thought. Another objection that can be raised against this school of thought is that if this school of thought were right, then it would lead to anarchism. And anarchism is the product produced this school of thought. This objection is not restricted to this school of thought. It can also include the previous school of thought as well. The previous school of thought, I mean the cultural relativism or moral relativism, was saying that society is the standard for evaluation. The question arises, which society is the standard for evaluation? Your society, my society, the international community, which society? So this leads inevitably to anarchism. Every society would say that I'm right, you're wrong. And as a result, there will be conflict. There will be clash. And blood will be let. And things will be destroyed. The same objection can be leveled against subjectivism. You subjectivists say that feelings are the criteria for deciding on moral matters. But which feeling is the standard? Your feeling is the standard, or my feeling? His feeling is the standard, or her feeling? The feeling of your community is the standard for moral judgment, or the feeling of my community? So these are the things that tell us that we must accept and we must follow anarchism. And if we follow anarchism, what will happen? What will be the consequence? The consequence will be very much bad, because there will be conflict. Thinking that you are right, you will fight me. And thinking that I'm right, I will fight you. Imagining that my society is right, I will fight you. And imagining that your society is right, you'll fight me. And as a result, countries will fall into war with each other. And as a result, hundreds of thousands of people will be killed. Houses, buildings, bridges will be destroyed. And losses will be the result of this school of thought. And since nobody agrees with such kind of consequences, and since nobody accepts such kind of grief results, as a result, we can say that no wise person can accept this moral of thought. Because the acceptance of this moral moral school of thought will lead inevitably to anarchism. And since anarchism is not acceptable, therefore we can conclude that this school of thought is not acceptable. So this is another objection. Yet there could be another objection against this school of thought. This school of thought claims that there is a necessary connection or there is a necessary relation between being good on the one hand and being liked on the other. But this is not right. The reason why this is not right is that there are many things that you like, while they are not good. And there are many things on the other hand that you dislike, while they are not bad. So we cannot infer from being liked the fact that it is good. And we cannot infer from being disliked the fact that it is bad. For example, you may like to drink heavily, and you may like to get drunk, and as a result you may like to hurt people. Can we conclude from this that getting drunk is good and hurting people is good? No wise person in the world will agree with this conclusion. Or for example, you may like to flank a student just for fun. If your feeling is the standard for moral evaluation, then this work must be good. This practice must be appreciated. But nobody appreciates such kind of practices. Nobody praises such kind of practices. Nobody applauds such kind of deeds. So from this we understand that there is no mutual relation between feelings and goodness. You may have a positive feeling towards something, but it may not be good. And you may have a negative feeling towards something, and it may not be bad. So your feeling is not the standard for judging or for passing moral judgment. And let me raise another objection. And this objection could be based on Islamic moral principles. According to Islamic thinking, feeling, crude feeling, cannot be the standard for moral evaluation. According to Islam, you may have different feelings. You feel hungry and you eat something. You feel thirsty and you drink something. You feel tired and you get rest. You feel to go somewhere and you go. These are good feelings, and these feelings have to be dealt with positively. They have to be taken into account properly. But there are other feelings that must not be taken into account. They must be resisted. For example, you may like to do something bad. You may like to go to some bad places. You may like to do certain social evil, deeds. But these are the things that must not be welcomed. So according to Islamic moral thinking, every feeling is not the standard for moral evaluation. Because feelings are of two types, some are good and some are bad. And since they are of two types, therefore they cannot be the standard. So what should we do from the Islamic point of view? According to Islamic thinking, we must make moral laws the standard for our feelings. And the moral and moral values must give shape to our feelings. Moral principles must guide our feelings. What to do and tell it what to do and what not to do. So morality must be the standard. And feelings, personal feelings have to follow the moral standards. And moral standards have to rule over personal feelings. But of course, if you improve spiritually, if you reach in a stage of purity or a stage of infallibility, like the infallible imams, peace be upon them, like the prophets, peace be upon them. Of course, in that time, your feelings, your likes and dislikes can be considered as the standard for moral judgment. Because in that time, your dislikes will not echo your selfish desires, your lower being. Instead, they will reflect the demands of God. They will reflect divine values. And therefore, the infallibles are said to have been in such a state of affair. And there are traditions that tell about Hazrat Fatima, peace be upon her, that the Holy Prophet says, do not disturb Fatima, because if she is angry, her anger is the anger of God. And if she is happy, her happiness is the happiness of God. So you see that here, the likes and dislikes of Fatima, peace be upon her, are the likes and dislikes of God. They are the examples of the likes and dislikes of God. But it is because Hazrat Fatima has reached a high level of maturity. She is a perfect human being. She is an infallible person. And therefore, her likes and dislikes are the standards for moral evaluation. But an ordinary person cannot be as such. His or her crude feelings cannot be the standards for moral judgments. If he or she wants to reach such a state, he or she must strive hard. He or she must struggle. And by struggling and by striving, he or she might reach a state of affair where his like or her like will be the like of God. And his dislike or her dislike will be the dislike of God. And while after reaching that stage, then he can claim that his feeling is the standard for moral judgment. But before reaching that stage, of course, he cannot make such a claim. Thank you very much.